Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities with Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. New York residents will now have to pay for natural gas hookups even if their house is close to a gas line. As Jung-Yoon Han from the New York Public News Network reports, environmental advocates are celebrating the move.
For decades, New York had a policy that would let residents living within 100 feet of a gas line hook up their homes for free, and that cost would be spread among the residents, neighbors, and ratepayers. But state lawmakers voted largely along party lines this week to remove that policy. Democrats say the bill will disincentivize fossil fuel use and help the state reach its environmental sustainability goals. Joanne Simon, a Brooklyn Democrat, co-sponsored the legislation.
It is unfair for you and I to be paying for the hookups of people who are newly connecting to the gas system.
Opponents of the bill claimed it would make energy costs unaffordable for rural New Yorkers. The bill now heads to Governor Kathy Hochul's desk for approval. In Albany, I'm Jung-Yoon Han for the New York Public News Network.
Between tariff uncertainties and a decline in Canadian tourism, many upstate businesses are bracing for a slow summer. In the scenic village of Lake George, businesses are concerned. The Legislative Gazette's Aaron Shella Levine reports.
From t-shirt shops to ice cream parlors, locally owned businesses of all types line Lake George's main strip on Route 9. But Dilligaff, Google it, sets itself apart with profane shirts and merchandise designed to offend. Store owner William Masry is similarly unapologetic in his assessment about what's happening with tourism in the Adirondack Village.
What really annoys me, that orange man in Washington, D.C. alienated the great people of Canada, the great white north. They don't come here anymore.
Like many shop owners in town, Masry says he's noticed a downturn in business this season in a village that regularly welcomes Canadian tourists. U.S. Customs and Border Patrol numbers show that Canadian tourism is indeed down, with the number of travelers entering New York from the northern border from January to April dropping by roughly 17% year over year. That follows the Trump administration's tariff policies, leading to tenser-than-normal relations between the neighboring countries. The decrease in visitors from the north is likely contributing to what several Lake George businesses say has been an unusually slow start to the summer season, also contributing the weather and higher prices. Masry says he's noticed the slow start at both of his locations in town.
The weather's been horrific, so we had a bad Memorial Day weekend. Americade is our busiest week of the year, and unfortunately, weather really screwed us. It was 70% down because of the weather. I think the economy's solid. It's just the weather. And honestly, it is what it is. We can't control the weather.
Facing reluctant Canadian tourists, the Lake George Chamber of Commerce tells WAMC it is turning its focus to nearby American cities and trying to attract visitors who haven't been in the area recently. The village was also awarded $10 million in state downtown revitalization initiative funds, and a portion of that will go toward constructing a new Shepherd Park amphitheater after it burned down a year ago. But in the meantime, business owners hope the current season picks up. Carmela Mastrotoni has owned the Lake George Olive Oil Company for 15 years.
This is middle-class America. This is where families come to. This is where working families come to, you know, and they just don't have the confidence in our economy or what's going on with the government right now that I believe that they're more cautious to spend the money.
This winter was the first in several years that saw thick enough ice on the lake to allow for skating, and local businesses took full advantage of a successful shoulder season. Still, Mastrantoni says without a good summer, many local shops will struggle to survive.
I can't open any more hours. I'm open 7 days a week. I just don't see that what I can do. My season is better. We're May to October. Our shoulder season has gotten stronger. I'm thankful for that. So, but again, these are still families that are trying to come up, and if they're not feeling comfortable with their pocketbooks, they're not going to come up. There'll be more people staying at home and just saying, you know, we can cut here so we can have a Christmas.
Steps down the road, her family also operates Capri Pizzeria and Restaurant. It's been in the family for more than 5 decades.
I've never seen it like this. I don't know. Nothing we can do about it. Can't change weather, and people just, they're not spending money. They're not moving.
Rocco Mastrantoni has some savings to buoy the restaurant, but he says that won't last forever.
It's going to be a tough winter. Lake George is like a little wheel with a mouse in it. It goes round and round, you know. So you make money in the summer to live through the winter. If you don't get it, you ain't got it. You can't bring back water that's gone under the bridge already.
Mastrantoni says the only thing left to do is hope that the economy picks back up before the summer is over. But he'd like to see renewed efforts by local officials to spur tourism and business.
You really can't plan a vacation place if you ain't got people. So I think Lake George needs more attractions to attract people. Anything. We used to have Gaslight, we used to have Water Slide, we used to have a bunch of little things that brought people here.
Of course, not every business on Route 9 is dependent on beach weather. Playland Arcade sits just across the street from Shepherd Park. Behind the prize counter, Scott Crone says they might even do better on a rainy Saturday. He says the arcade has still been ordering prizes and new games and thought ahead by placing a big order before tariffs took effect.
Yeah, it's been a little slow pickup. Memorial Day was a little slower than we'd like, but we still had a good, pretty decent outcome. And, you know, like I said, it kind of takes a little while for us to get our season going. We kind of wait till the school gets out and we have a little more clientele coming through to play the games, you know. But so far, so good. Hoping that we can keep it rolling.
Reporting on the campus of Skidmore College, I'm Aaron Shelley Levine.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. On the heels of the Trump administration renaming the Louisiana Fort that honored Albany World War I hero Henry Johnson, local officials this week announced plans to rename an Albany landmark in Johnson's honor. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
In 2023, Louisiana's Fort Polk, named after slave owner and Confederate General Leonidas Polk, was renamed Fort Johnson in honor of Albany's own Henry Johnson, a Black Medal of Honor recipient. The Trump administration is changing base names back, and Fort Johnson will once again be Fort Polk, although it will honor World War II Silver Star recipient General James H. Polk instead of the Confederate General. 46th District New York Senator Pat Fahey, a Democrat, says that news felt like a gut punch.
It is shameless, and it's you know, you have to call it what it is. This is clearly trying to whitewash the history, clearly a complete dishonor to any, in this case, an African-American soldier, where almost 100 years to reclaim that, and then to have it just washed away practically overnight.
To help restate claim to that legacy, Fahey Assembly colleagues Gabriella Romero of the 109th and John McDonald of the 108th, along with Republican Senator Jake Ashby of the 43rd District, have introduced legislation that would rename the Patroon Island Bridge after Johnson. In a shared statement, the four officials noted that the Dutch patroons who settled the region procured and exploited enslaved people, with part of the majority of those enslaved living in Albany and Rensselaer counties. Ashby said changing the name of the Hudson River span that connects Albany and Rensselaer would give Johnson recognition he deserves.
It took nearly a century for Sergeant Johnson to receive his Medal of Honor. He received the Croix de Guerre in 1918. So it took the French government a lot less time to recognize his acts of valor and his choice to serve 31 years before the military was desegregated, 47 years before the Civil Rights Act. Think about that. It's an important piece of history to juxtapose where we are now and why it's so important to continue to honor him here.
Johnson, who settled in Albany as a teenager, suffered 21 wounds serving under French command because of the racial divide of the time. Back home in New York, severely wounded from combat, Johnson died impoverished in 1929. Jackie Jones is the commander of the North Albany American Legion, post 1610.
This is not just about politics. It's about principle, it's about truth, and it's about justice. Let this bridge renaming be more than just a gesture. Let it be a statement. Let it be a step forward. Let it be a call to action. Speak up, stand with us, as our Senate and elected officials have decided to do in New York State. And make sure Sergeant Henry Johnson's legacy is not just remembered, but respected, preserved, and never erased again.
McDonald says the Senate and Assembly will look to pass the measure into law sometime during the first quarter of 2026.
Once it's signed into law, within 1 or 2 months' time, the signs go up.
Legislators have been working with the New York State Department of Transportation to place signage. McDonald adds that Johnson's heroic efforts reflect diversity, equity, and inclusion, qualities he says have made America strong.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Two people accused of stealing groceries in an upstate suburb are now facing deportation. WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind reports the arrests highlight the consequences when local police cooperate with federal immigration agents.
2121, just be advised as well.
It started as a routine police call for shoplifting.
1400 Altamont Avenue, the Hannaford. We have a Hispanic couple with a stroller loaded up with merchandise.
Officers in Rotterdam, a town of about 30,000 outside Schenectady, found two people in the cramped security office of a local grocery store one morning this March. Staff said the suspects, Michael and Maria, took things like rice, beans, bread, and olive oil. They hid them under a stroller carrying Maria's child. The total value? Was $159. But a relatively minor charge escalated when officers checked Michael's ID.
Jew policy in my country.
You are?
In my country.
In his country, he's a police officer.
In my country, free police here.
He provided an expired ID showing he was a police officer in Nicaragua. People are often ticketed rather than arrested when accused of shoplifting. Police only take suspects in if they can't verify their identity.
I'm kind of torn as to
since he's got ID.
The patrol officer called his supervisor. A detective called ICE.
Because this guy's got the police ID and stuff. He said, don't do anything with them until I call you back.
What you just heard is one of the first known cases under the federal Laken Riley Act in New York State. President Trump signed it into law earlier this year.
Today, the Department of Homeland Security will be required to detain all illegal aliens who have been arrested for theft, burglary, larceny, shoplifting, assaulting a police officer, murder.
But according to Lauren DeRosier, who runs the immigration clinic at Albany Law School, the statute only places requirements on federal officers who learn about arrests. It doesn't require local police departments to call ICE.
I think it's a very sad case, and I think that it demonstrates how quickly things can escalate for people who don't have immigration status.
She supports state legislation called the New York for All Act. The bill would let local police help ICE with serious felony offenses or a judicial warrant. But if ICE just issued a detainer request, like with Michael and Maria, police would have to stand down.
We're going to pass New York for All together. Thank you.
Shut it down!
Hundreds of people keep coming to the state capitol to demonstrate in support of the legislation, which would basically make New York a sanctuary state. Here's Bronx Assemblymember Amanda Septimo at a recent rally.
If we have a federal government that is hell-bent on leading with cruelty instead of love, then we don't need to help them. In fact, we have a responsibility to resist.
Proponents are still pushing for some kind of action in the final days of Albany's lawmaking session. But top Democratic leaders, including Governor Kathy Hochul, haven't signed on. Hochul is trying to walk a fine line on immigration cooperation.
I want to make sure we get rid of people who are seriously committing crimes, but leave the rest alone. They already made it here. They're part of our family, and this is where it's a huge divide.
The Trump administration is cracking down on sanctuary jurisdictions, and Hochul will testify before Congress later this week about New York's immigration policies. In Albany, GOP lawmakers support a bill that would require local police departments to call ICE if they arrest an undocumented immigrant. State Senator Andrew Lanza represents Staten Island. He says departments who don't call are essentially obstructing justice.
Sanctuary state means we're not complying with federal law.
He renamed his state bill after the Lake and Riley law. If an immigrant already broke the law to enter the U.S., Lanza says any subsequent offense is worse.
To me, it's even more egregious. You have somebody that not only broke into the country, but now you committed a crime.
For now, municipalities around New York State have a hodgepodge of rules. Rotterdam police leaders say they don't have a specific policy on dealing with non-citizens. But in the case of Michael and Maria, they proactively call ICE. Officers took Michael back to the station without incident. They charged him with shoplifting and endangering the welfare of a child because Maria's 3-year-old daughter was with the couple at the grocery store. But the arrest took a turn when officers handed Michael over to federal agents. Surveillance footage shows he slipped out of his handcuffs and tried to walk away.
Hold on. Your hands. My hands right there.
6 federal and local police officers used a taser to rearrest Michael. Court records allege an ICE agent suffered a bruised jaw. Michael is charged with assaulting a federal officer. During the scuffle, he kept shouting out in Spanish that he had ID. He says, I have a social security number, immigration papers. The officers didn't respond.
Stop moving!
Michael is currently at a jail near Albany. His federal case is pending, and his lawyer declined to comment. Maria and her daughter first came to Rotterdam in 2023. They were bused to a motel there by New York City officials after immigrating from Colombia. Maria's legal representative declined to comment, but she's now in federal custody without her child.
I know we're going to get mommy, I promise.
Body camera footage captures the girl crying in the back seat of a police cruiser as her mother was being processed. Police turned her over to social services. In Rotterdam, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network. We'll be right back.
listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Thousands of residents turned out last Saturday for the No Kings protests across New York and the U.S. As the Legislative Gazette's Jesse King reports, the events were largely peaceful.
With signs, speakers, and the occasional megaphone, a few hundred people took to the sidewalks in Newburgh to protest the Trump administration's policies. Starting at Montgomery Street, the crowd snaked through the sidewalks by the Newburgh waterfront in a nearly single-file line. Resident Terry DeMayo came out to protest the efforts by Immigration and Customs Enforcement to ramp up deportations nationwide.
They're leading with hate. They're leading with divisiveness. The level of inhumanity that is around us. How do these people not see what's going on? How do they accept these are all human beings. We're all freaking human beings.
The Newburgh event was one of more than 2,000 protests nationwide, and at its core, it was not much different from other protests that have occurred locally since Trump's inauguration. This time, marchers aimed to counter the president's 79th birthday and an up to $45 million military parade his administration threw in Washington, D.C.
It's a waste of money. It is. We always appreciate our military. There's no need for a parade.
And I think it's important for us to show that there are people who don't believe in what's going on.
Yes.
And we'll continue to march until we see change.
You are beautiful! That's amazing!
While marchers turned out in droves, events throughout the WAMC listening area were mostly peaceful. Multiple sheriffs said protests in their jurisdictions this weekend were peaceful with no arrests. Ulster County Sheriff Juan Figueroa says there were multiple No Kings rallies in the county this weekend, including in New Paltz, Gardner, Woodstock, and Kingston. He says roughly 4,000 people came to the Kingston protest, and everything went smoothly.
I think there was one individual in the city of Kingston that sat in the middle of Albany Avenue, but when he was asked to get up and to try and stop traffic, when he was asked to get up and leave, he did. So we had, to my knowledge, no incidents in any of the demonstrations this weekend.
There was one incident in the North Country in which a protester from New Hampshire allegedly struck and bit a Trump supporter in Warrensburg, New York. 32-year-old Catherine Benincasa is charged with misdemeanor assault, menacing, and criminal possession of a weapon. There were no arrests in Newburgh, and aside from a random outburst shouted from a nearby apartment building, protesters didn't encounter much opposition. Some protesters who spoke with WAMC declined to give their full names, as some protests have gotten tense in recent weeks. President Trump deployed the National Guard and Marines to California earlier this month to confront residents protesting ICE there. He's described the protests as riots. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, meanwhile, promised to crack down on protesters and even suggested last week that drivers in his state had a right to hit protesters with their cars if they felt threatened. And one person was killed amid gunfire at a No Kings protest in Salt Lake City, Utah. On Saturday in Newburgh, some marchers chanted calls like, quote, "No justice, no peace," but many walked in silence with signs declaring, quote, "Defend the Constitution, impeach Trump," or, quote, "If there's money for a parade, there's money for Medicaid," end quote. A point to Trump's big, beautiful budget bill in Congress, which would slash spending for the program. Steve Urbanowitz, who came across the river from Beacon, says he feels as if he has no choice but to protest.
This is not normal. This is not okay. We don't know what to expect anymore. This is day to day, like our tariffs now. And our economy, it's up and down. You have a retirement portfolio, and you're sweating it out. You know, who knows? That could all be gone. Who knows?
Reporting from Newburgh for WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau on the campus of Vassar College, I'm Jesse King.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. Look for program number 2525. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.